Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 7:30 a.m. and that is Guangzhou time. This is the video for August 14th. And I'm a little late posting the comment of the day today. I had a bit of a stomach flu yesterday, which took me out of commission. Feeling a bit better this morning, so I will endeavour to get the website up presently. But it was a momentous day on Wall Street yesterday, with the 10 minus 2 year yield curve spread on US Treasuries moving briefly into negative territory. And the UK yield curve is also now negative. I think it is important amid all of the highlights and headlines about the yield curve to remember what it is in fact suggesting and where and when it does tend to be a lead indicator. The first is that while certainly the UK's yield curve became inverted back in approximately late 2005, but very briefly at the beginning of 2005, it doesn't have the same type of reliability as a lead indicator for the UK economy than the US yield curve does for the US economy. Nevertheless, when we think about what in fact is going on in the UK, where there is this massive uncertainty about Brexit, and we have now had a negative quarter in terms of UK growth, well, the technical definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Therefore, if we are thinking about where is the clear and urgent risk of a recession, then potentially we're talking about the UK. And when we think about, therefore, what is going on in terms of the government bond yield, well, it is worth looking at the 10-year and then questioning. The yield is currently at 44 basis points, and UK yields have been contracting pretty steadily all year. This is against a background where the yield curves for much of Europe are already negative. Therefore, the question I think investors have to be asking is, how long is it that the UK's bonds are going to remain above zero? And the way that this chart is evolving, the fact that there is a negative yield curve, and the fact that the Bank of England may be pressured into cutting rates more than they might like to, that does bring forward the potential that the UK will be the next country to move into negative interest rates in a big way. Against that background, it's worth keeping an eye on what's going on in the stock market. Well, the FTSE 100 was in negative territory yesterday, and that was a pretty similar story right across the board in terms of the stock markets. It is now just about below the trend mean, and if it is going to bounce, then this is where it needs to bounce. The FTSE 250 has been the go-to index for UK investors for much of the decade, and it has been a clear outperformer relative to the FTSE 100. It's now pausing below the 20,000 level, and this is right in the region of the trend mean. It's exactly where, ideally, support would need to start to come back in. This has been a choppy uptrend over the course of the advance from 2008 and upwards. There have been multiple occasions on which it has traded substantially below the trend mean. In fact, those have almost universally been buying opportunities. So this index probably does need some additional room in which to trade, just simply by virtue of the fact that it is volatile by nature. But if the upward trend is going to be sustained, the low put in at the beginning of this year absolutely needs to hold. One of the other additional consistency characteristics that we've seen during the course of this bull market has been the fact that every time it has pulled back, it has rebounded, and the subsequent low has the lows have in fact held. Well, we had the rebound in the first quarter, and now we've had the market going sideways. That suggests that this level absolutely needs to hold. One thing that is helping to cushion the UK stock market has been the weakness of the pound, and it is currently at 120. This represents the lows put in immediately after the Brexit vote in 2016, when looked at against the US dollar. And certainly there is a short-term oversold condition right now, but there has been a distinct absence of upward dynamics, and that is what we're going to have to see in order to really suggest that there is scope for a reversionary rally unfolding in the short term. Well, then when we think about how is the pound doing versus the euro, it failed to sustain the move above 1.15 back in March. Now it is right back down on the lows we saw in 2017. This is the area where if it is going to find support, then it needs to do it. That was a big downward dynamic that we saw four sessions ago, but the succession of lower rally highs is still very much intact, and there is an increasing willingness among investors to believe that the Boris Johnson administration is going to trigger a hard Brexit. That is, I think, part of the reason why we've had a quarter of negative growth. One of the biggest arguments that has been going around about Brexit was that the economy has been doing absolutely fine. But of course, the economy was doing fine because the pound was so weak, and that greatly enhanced the ability of businesses to compete. We're probably going to require an additional devaluation in the pound in order to reinvigorate that competitive advantage. There is, of course, the additional point that when we look at the global economy, growth is slowing down. So if one is hoping for an export-driven recovery, then it would be handy to have demand growth for those exports as well. And when we think about what's going on in terms of China, well, they are experiencing a significant growth slowdown, and perhaps more importantly, they're showing an unwillingness to pull on the levers that have historically been successful in reigniting demand in the economy, which was massive infrastructure development. Instead, they are trying the same kind of fiscal stimulus that the USA has been trying, but that is not yet enough to really turn the tide in terms of slowing growth. And the reason for that is because while China's domestic economy has certainly done well and has grown substantially over the course of the last decade, it is not yet large enough to really take over in terms of the dominance of the economy that you have, for example, in the USA. China is still a major manufacturing sector, and that depends on demand for those manufactured goods. The fact that the number of cars being sold continues to trend downwards, well, that isn't simply just because of the fact that more cities have instituted anti-car policies in China. Then we look at the fact that iron ore prices are starting to come back down, that copper prices are right on their lows. And what this is starting to paint a picture of is that China's growth is slowing down, and there is a clear need for a sustained source of additional and massive stimulus to arrest the decline. Copper continues to pause here around the $2.60 area. This has been the lower side of the range over the course of the last 18 months. Now the big question is it going to do more than that? Is it going to be able to push up and away from these levels? The continuous commodity index is still trending downwards. And as long as it is trending down, then it would be hard to argue that we are back in a commodity-led recovery. In fact, I think this is perhaps a better arbiter of the slowdown in global growth than just about anything else. Nonetheless, oil prices, having bounced really quite impressively yesterday, are now still back below the $60 area and gave up much of the advance that we saw yesterday. This continues to look like a bearish environment overall. And when we think about the fact that we had the Type 2 top formation and now right-hand extension, there is a short-term oversold condition, but oil has a lot of work to do to really confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Well, with bond prices rallying substantially, now the bigger question is why are I think perhaps the better question is, what kind of safe haven is likely to do best against a background where people really are starting to worry about a recession? And gold is continuing to hold this $1,500 area. The consolidation that's been on over the course of the last week is relatively similar in size to the one that we saw in June and July. So that's a normal consolidation. Silver prices are trading back below, excuse me, back above the $17 area. And there was a great deal of volatility 2 days ago, but it is now pushing up and out of this consolidation. This is looking like a rather consistent recovery with little ranges one above another. The clearest thing that has happened over the course of the last 3 years has been the breaking of this downtrend, and it does suggest that the first area of potential resistance is around the $20 area. When we then think about platinum, well, the higher gold goes and the higher silver goes, the greater the likelihood is that investors will start to look at platinum favorably. However, it hasn't quite yet been able to reach escape velocity, and it is still holding in this base formation evident over the course of the last 9 months. And the best thing we can say about it is that there is still a sequence of higher reaction lows. Now let's take a look at the US yield curve. Well, I think the most important thing is that the speed with which it has come shooting down over the course of the last 3 weeks tells us that investors are getting worried about a recession. They are getting worried that the trade war is going to have negative repercussions for the domestic US economy. And they are willing to bet that we are moving progressively towards not only competitive currency devaluation, but also a round of additional extraordinary monetary policy that was once considered impossible. So that, I think, is where we are now in terms of the messages that this is sending. One thing that's, I think, also important is that the lead indicator for a US recession that is offered by the yield curve spread is anything from 6 to 18 months out. So, for example, when we look at the inversion that happened at the end of 2005, well, we didn't really start to get real trouble in the markets until the yield curve started to turn back upwards in a dynamic manner. And that was really in the middle of 2007. So that was a really very significant lead indicator over a year and a half. Then when we go back, oops, gold, sorry, my Bloomberg has just crashed. Now when we look at this inversion that we had in 2000, well, there was a very brief inversion in 1998, it wasn't really for another year and a half before we got the big decline on the markets in early 2000, and it was then in towards the end of 2000 that the economy really started to benefit again from the massive interest rate cuts, and yet the yield curve went all the way up to over 300, or well, 275 basis points over the course of the next few years, going all the way back to the 1987. There was an inversion in 1988, and again, a mild recession in the early 1990s. That was, and then of course we have this massive, messy period around the savings and loans crisis in the late 1970s. What this is telling us is quite clear that the yield curve is a long lead indicator. Now think about where is US growth? It will have to contract very substantially over the course of the next while. One thing that we know is that one of the best lead indicators for future problems is in fact the stock market. And the stock market was down in a dynamic manner in here today. It is still above its trend mean. It's within a few percent of its all-time peak. The minimum requirement in order to confirm that this is a failed upside break is going to be a sustained move below that trend mean. If the market, having pushed up and away, then starts to pull back and trades below the trend mean for a sustained period, then that would start to signal that prices are on average falling. But it hasn't done that yet, and it may not do it at all. When we then go back and think about the fact that it was in 2006 that the yield curve became inverted, but the market didn't really break down and encounter resistance in the region of the trend mean until the middle of 2008, which was nearly 2 years later. I think that's rather important to bear in mind, and I think that the closest analog we have today is the period around the late 1990s, because there was a lot of pressure building in the global economy in the 1990s, ahead of the peak in the year 2000 in on Wall Street. But it's worth remembering that the yield curve became inverted in 1998, and we did have a bigger pullback, and it was a significant pullback below the trend mean. And from the lows in 1998, the index went up almost an additional 50%. So that's a massive move. The big question today is, how likely is that again? Are we likely to get a bubble phase on Wall Street? Well, I do think that there is still scope for that. There is an awful lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. If this is at the beginning of a recession, it's been the most widely telegraphed recession in history, and the quantity of cash that's sitting on the sidelines suggests that a lot of people have taken money out of the market already, and yet the stock market is still pushing on to new high ground. There is a willingness among the central bankers of the world to continue to provide monetary and fiscal stimulus, and we are in the middle of August, and it is quite normal to have a period of volatility in August. The much bigger point would be to question whether we're going to get a rebound in September, because that's normal. We generally do get a rebound in September. This sell in May and come back on St. Ledger's Day or Labor Day has been around for a long time. It is quite normal to get a period of underperformance in August, and these primary indices are trading above their trend means. Generally, what we do get after inverted yield curve is a period where people do worry about a recession, And we may even get some additional volatility on stock markets. Then the additional monetary stimulus starts to really start to kick in, and investors are willing to inflate once more the asset prices and valuations. One thing that is arguing against that is corporate profits, because corporate profits have been going sideways for a pretty prolonged period, and they're already at all-time highs. The last time this chart was updated was in March 31st, so it's only updated once a quarter, and that means that we're not going to have the next update because it's done quarterly in arrears, which means there's a 6-month lag. So we're not going to have the next update until the end of September. But it has definitely lost momentum. We had a very meaningful peak in corporate profits in 1998, and then they started to trend downwards. We also had a peak in corporate profits back in the end of September 2006, and then they started to trend downwards. Well, we had a meaningful peak in corporate profits back in 2014, and that was 5 years ago. We had another peak in corporate profits, a lower high, so to speak, at the or in the middle of last year. Now, what I think a lot of investors will be paying attention to is whether this breaks downwards when it is next updated in September. If it does break downwards, then that is going to put pressure on company valuations, because in order for the price level to be sustained, it means that the there is a strong likelihood that the PE would have to rise. We've already had valuation expansion. The fact that the market has been going up while corporate profits have been going sideways is representative of valuation expansion. Excuse me, I need to sneeze. Excuse me. So, what that is beginning to suggest here is that there is, I think this is something to pay attention to. If, on the other hand, corporate profits bounce when they are next reported, then that will lend additional life to this advance, because it will improve valuations. It will give people a better perspective on exactly what is going on. When we think about what's going on in terms of the banking sector, well, an inverted yield curve is really not great news, and the S&P 500 banks has pulled back in a pretty dynamic manner in here today. And yet the sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact. So I think that's an additional point here, that yes, it has pulled back in a dynamic manner, but it does have scope in which to bounce and still sustain this upward bias overall. The Russell 2000 has failed to push back above the 1600 point level, and it's now back in the region of the lower side of its range. And the transportation index, which has be also been a laggard, has been pulling back and continues to hold its sequence of lower rally highs. So that is, these are all representative of potential slowdowns in the global economy, and how it is feeding through into the US economy. The kinds of things that we need to pay attention to are jobless rates, because you can't very well have a recession without having people losing their jobs, and this remains really very well contained. So as long as that remains the case, then fears about a US recession are probably a little overblown, or at least prescient. The question that is being answered by investors right now is, how long will the US economy remain immune from the worst effects of the trade war when global growth is slowing down just about everywhere. And what the inverted yield curve is beginning to suggest is that investors are now pricing in the potential that the end of that period of outperformance is closer than it was before. But the most important thing we have to pay attention to is the fact that stock markets are still above their respective trend means. And yes, there was a significant pullback in here today with the Dow and the S&P down approximately 3%. But they still have room in which to bounce. This is a corrective phase. So, and it is not over. I think that's the additional point. There could potentially be additional downside. This is the time to pay particular attention to the consistency of trends. When we think about the kind of pullback we saw, for example, today on Cisco, it was pulling back by $2 on a $50 stock. So that's a significant pullback. It's also now right in the region of its trend mean, and this has been a pretty impressive rebound over the course of the last 3 years. In normal circumstances, this is exactly where one would anticipate support starting to come back in if it's a consistent trend. And so far, this is a consistent trend. There are a significant number of markets that look very similar to this. And the performance of stocks and the outlook for the markets, the fact that we are going to see massive sources of additional liquidity hitting the market from both the Federal Reserve and the ECB over the course of the next month or so, that has the potential to help to inflate asset prices further. The point, of course, is that we need to pay attention to what prices are doing rather than what the media are saying. And this, I think, is a particularly important point relative to the very sensational media headlines that we're getting of late. And with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.